What is art without the muse? Many of Western art's most famous works are depictions of women. But who were these women? Do they have their own stories to share with the world? Hi, listeners. Grace Anna here, host of Art Muse, a podcast that shares the life stories of the women pictured in famous works of art. In doing so, Art Muse aims to reshape the ways in which we interpret these well-known works by paying dues to the women whose images have been immortalized, but whose names and stories have been wrongfully overlooked. Each episode focuses our attention on a specific female muse, sharing their important life and legacy. By sharing these women's stories, we are given the opportunity to appreciate artworks from a new perspective, through the eyes of the women whose image stares back at us. Season 3 continues to share the life stories of the women pictured in famous works of art, this time focusing on artist models who were also performers in their own right. Season 3 will begin its release this fall. We cannot wait to share these amazing women's stories with you. In the meantime, we hope you continue to enjoy Season 1 and 2 of Art Muse, available on all streaming platforms. Until next time, bye for now.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Stars of the Golden Age, a show that highlights the lives of legends from film, music, and the birth of television during Hollywood's Golden Age, with a special emphasis on their lives behind the scenes. I am your host, Erin Carlson. Today, we will be talking about one of the most famous and most forgotten silent film stars. The original vamp of the silver screen, Theda Bara. Sometimes as I'm researching our stars, I realize a little ways into my research that there is going to be way more than I anticipated. Theda Bara, it turns out, is one of those individuals. I will admit, I knew virtually nothing about her when I opened the cover of her biography. But I could tell within the first two pages that it was going to be a good story. So, in honor of Theda Bara and shining the brightest light I can on her, her story will be told in two parts. Today, I will talk about her childhood, the chase towards her dreams, and her rise to stardom. And then I will tell you the conclusion of Theda Bara's story next week. My primary source for this episode was the premier biography written about Theda Bara. It was actually the very first full biography book written about her. It was written in 1996, and there are only a couple more out there today. The book is Vamp, The Rise and Fall of Theda Bara by Eve Golden. I've used Eve Golden's work before. I used her biography of Jane Mansfield for her episode. She is a top-notch biographer, you guys, so I was really excited to have the most accurate information available for Theda Bara. Let's dive in. I actually have two stories to share with you to kick this journey off. Two versions of Theda Bara's early life. One is the truth, and one was completely fabricated by the Fox Film Corporation. I'm going to tell you both of them. First, here is what the studio would want you to know about the background of its most intriguing star. Theda Bara was born in Egypt, in the shadow of the ancient pyramids. Her father was an Italian sculptor and her mother a stunning French actress. Theda spent her first years in Egypt, living in a large tent with the Sphinx being the first sight every morning as that tent flap opened. She was thrust by her Bohemian parents into a life in the arts and worldly knowledge. She learned many languages. Her father taught her his art, how to sculpt, how to paint. When Theda was a little older, the family moved to Paris, where Theda joined her actress mother in the theater. She stunned audiences who sat before every stage she presented herself on. In 1914, American film director Frank Powell discovered the young French-Italian actress and whisked her away to America and made her a movie star. Sounds thrilling and beautiful, doesn't it? A perfect childhood filled with love and art and cultural enrichment. Living in Giza and Cairo and Paris, amongst so much amazing rich culture and history. It was indeed beautiful. If it was true. None of this was true. This was the truth told to the public by the Fox Film Corporation. Let me tell you the real backstory of Theda Bara. Theda Bara was born as Theodosia Goodman in Cincinnati, Ohio on July 29, 1885, to parents Bernard and Pauline Goodman. I'm sure Cincinnati is lovely, but it's no Cairo. Bernard was not an artist, nor was he Italian. He immigrated to the U.S. from Russia in 1871 at 18 years old, and settled in Cincinnati where he found work as a fabric cutter in a tailor shop. Theda's mother, Pauline, immigrated to the U.S. from Switzerland around the same time. However, she was 8 years younger than Bernard, so she was still a child when she immigrated. She arrived with her sister and her uncle. Her parents had sadly both died. Pauline's father was French and her mother German, so we finally see something that aligns with Fox's version of her, a French parent. Pauline began working in a wig shop when she was 17 or 18, and by 19, she was co-owner of the shop. Dunkelmeyer and DeCoppe Wig Makers. Pauline DeCoppe was her name. At 21, she married Bernard. Bernard quickly worked his way from fabric cutter in the tailor shop to designer and then owner of his very own tailor shop with two other partners. Bernard and Pauline were both successful entrepreneurs. So no, they may not have been an artist and an actress, but they were doing pretty well in very respectable businesses. And they didn't live in a tent. Although that sounds adventurous, I can't imagine it's much fun. So Theodosia was born in the summer of 1885, and her parents called her Teddy or Theda for short. They chose the name Theodosia in honor of former Vice President Aaron Burr's daughter Theodosia, who had died at sea. The Goodman family would grow to a family of five with the addition of two more children. Mark, or Buddy, in 1888, when Theda was three, and Esther, or Lori, as they called her, when Theda was 12 in 1897. I'm not really sure how they got Lori out of Esther. The family moved a lot. Biographer Eve Golden had found in her research no less than seven addresses connected to the family in a 15-year span, all within Cincinnati. It appears that every time their business success rose, they moved to a nicer neighborhood and a bigger house. Not mansions by any means, but large homes for the time. They finally settled in the Avondale neighborhood because of its strong Jewish population. The Goodmans were Jewish. This is something Theda would always be proud of. She was never very religious, but she was very proud of her heritage. Her actual heritage. The Goodman family was doing well. They even had two maids. And the Goodman children lived a very comfortable and pleasant life. They were blessed. Theda lived your typical middle or upper middle class childhood in late 19th century America. As a small child, she loved ransacking her mother's armoire and playing dress up. Imagine all of those gorgeous Victorian-era gowns and hats that Pauline owned. And wigs. You know she had tons of wigs. Theda loved school, she played with the neighborhood kids, and she loved to read. She found so much pleasure in escaping to faraway places through the pages of a book. Theda was a curious child, always looking for adventure, whether that be in a book or in real-life exploration. Before she could read, though, it was always through her own exploration. And this meant disappearing from the home on multiple occasions. Her parents tried everything to keep her locked inside the house, trying to make it impossible for her to make an escape. But she was smart, and she always figured it out. On one occasion, Theda Houdini'd her way out of the house wearing one of her mother's very best gowns and feathered hat, and ran down the street for a yet-to-be-discovered adventure, as her hysterical mother ran after her. I believe she was around 4 years old. Her mother wrote in a diary of the incident, quote, "We afterwards discovered she had hammered a small hole in the screen door, just large enough to crawl through," end quote. She was a very determined little girl. Want to know what Bernard and Pauline's next move was? They built an escape-proof cage in their backyard to put their child in. Here's another story to help you get a feel of what kind of little girl Theda was. When she was about 6 years old, there was a man terrorizing the neighborhood by sneaking up behind little girls and cutting off their hair. Horrifying and scary. Well, Theda was kept under close watch, so her hair was safe. And, well, she was feeling pretty left out and jealous that her hair wasn't victimized by the hair-stealing mystery man. So she cut off her own hair, and then she hid it under her bed and went screaming to her parents that the bad man had gotten her. Her parents, knowing it would have been impossible unless the man had been in their home or fenced yard, were onto her scheme very quickly. So now we've set the stage a little for the kind of spunky personality that lived within the tiny little dark-haired Theodosia Goodman. Now, what kind of activity do you think little Theda eventually fell into as an outlet for her vivacious, imaginative personality? Putting on theatrical performances, of course. By the age of 7, Theda was entertaining her family and neighbors in wildly creative and overly dramatic productions. She would draw inspiration from the countless books that she escaped into, as well as in art. She would take those inspirations, sprinkle in some dramatics from her insanely creative mind, and put together solo acts unlike anyone in her neighborhood had ever seen. Once she felt like she was a great child star, she convinced a neighbor to let her use his barn to put on a proper one-woman play. She enlisted the help of her brother and sister to collect admission and act as a bouncer. Reverse bouncer, actually. Her brother's job was to make sure nobody left the show. This may come as a surprise, but Theda was actually a pretty shy child. When it came to making friends, she felt very timid in doing so. This likely contributes to her creativity and love of performing arts. Yes, she enjoyed performing for others, but socializing with them was a whole different thing. She just really loved acting out those vivid pictures in her mind. As Theda grew into a teenager, she became captivated by famous theater actresses of the time. When the first silent films arrived, she was hooked. She wrote, quote, "I wanted to know how they dressed, what they ate, how they slept, and in short, everything about them," end quote. It was during her high school years when Theda began experimenting with fashion and style herself. For the first time, adorning black clothing and capes from time to time. Old-timey goth. She was heavily involved in the drama club and the school newspaper. Under her photo in her high school yearbook, the following was written. Theodosia D. Goodman. Then a quote of hers. "With heart and fancy all on fire to climb the hill of fame." And then this passage. Theo excels in the literary art, and her work bears the stamp of a true genius. Her literary ability, however, is not the only claim she has to fame. Her historic talent is a characteristic well known to those who have witnessed a performance of the Senior Dramatic Club. She is an entertaining conversationalist. Theda was a very unique and talented girl. She wasn't one to follow the crowd. I think that's very admirable. It takes a lot of courage to swim the other direction, especially in high school. Theda graduated from Walnut Hills High School in 1903, and her next move was very unorthodox for a young turn-of-the-century woman. She went to college. There, she immersed herself in the arts, glee club, drama club, anything she could. But 2 years into her college career, Theda could no longer ignore the growing desire inside of her to reach out for bigger and grander things. She wanted to see what opportunities lie outside of Ohio for her to feed her creative soul. New York was the place to be for a budding actress. It still is and probably always will be for theatrical actors. But it was 1905, and silent film studios were multiplying by the day. The original film capital of the United States was not Hollywood. It was actually Fort Lee, New Jersey, just across the Hudson River from New York. So there was a lot of entertainment action happening there at this time. These early silent films were still one or two reel shorts. But advancements were being made every day, and it wouldn't be long before feature-length 8 or 9 reel stories were being portrayed on screen. Theda wasn't sure she wanted to act in pictures, but she did want to act. She just needed something to be the vehicle for her creative spirit, and she wanted to do it in New York City. She had to go to New York. Like a great magnetic force, Theda was pulled away from everything she'd known and right into the epicenter of theater arts and the budding filmmaking industry. Things in the filmmaking world were changing at such a rapid rate. Things were happening. Exciting things. But 20-year-old Theda wasn't lucky enough to bounce right into the middle of it. And again, that's not really what she was seeking. She was seeking theater work. Broadway work. Theater work was respectable. Many people were still working on accepting film work. Aside from acquiring a new name, Theodosia de Coppe, her mother's maiden name, it's unknown exactly what she did during the first couple years in New York. But in an article written down the road in 1919, she was quoted as saying her early years in the city were, quote, a year or two of weird, incomprehensible experiences, which are too intimate for the public eye, end quote. She said she did work in the theater, but there's no surviving evidence of what or where she performed. So because of this lack of evidence, it's likely that she was playing bit parts far off Broadway. I think it's safe to say, though, that weird, incomprehensible experiences too intimate for the public eye likely means a far less risque thing in 1905 than it would today. Far less. I mean, back then, even traveling alone as a young woman without a chaperone made heads turn. The first evidence found of Theda's stage work in New York was from 1908. She appeared both in New York and with a traveling stock company. Future gossip columnist Hedda Hopper was also working in theater at this time and later recalled her first encounters with Theda on the stage. She played a French woman with an accent that wouldn't fool a 5-year-old. Oh, brother, she said. Never one to mince words, that one. Theda was not starring in any of these plays. She was a supporting player, and the experiences on the road for shows was not very pleasant. Travel conditions were meek, food was sparse, accommodations were dingy. It was a far cry from the glamour and exhilaration she'd had swimming through her mind back in Cincinnati. Theda lived this life for almost 10 years between productions in New York, never on Broadway, and on the road. She was finally coming to accept the fact that maybe her wild dreams of glamour and style of a big star were just too far out of reach for her. especially since she was 29 years old by 1914, which for 1914 was considered pretty old. Younger and thinner actresses were popping up all over the place, while the aging, curvy Theda remained stuck where she was. She was ready to return to Cincinnati, having at least given it a good, hard try, when she was approached by film director Frank Powell with 9 powerful words that completely changed the course of her life. How would you like to be in the movies? It was 1914, and silent films had now fully evolved from the scrappy film shorts and little rickety Nickelodeons to full-length dramatic films in grand movie palaces in many places. And if the place was nice enough, a full orchestra accompanying the story. Even if a movie house didn't have an orchestra or even a 3-piece band, there was at least a single person playing accompaniment on a piano. The movie-going experience had grown substantially in Theda's 9 years in New York, and she was asked if she wanted to be a part of it. You bet she did. 1914 was also a significant year in American filmmaking because that was the year the Great War began in Europe, World War I. The U.S. wouldn't enter the war until 1917, so while the Germans, British, and French were preoccupied by the war for those 3 years, American filmmakers were able to pick up the slack and dominate the film world. A few top silent film actresses of this time were Mary Pickford, of course, Lillian and Dorothy Gish, Blanche Sweet, Mabel Normand, and Norma Talmadge. Pretty soon, the name Theda Bara could be added to that list. Now, like I said, 29 was considered kind of old in 1914. Especially to just be entering motion pictures. So Theda just shaved a few years off her age. Instead of 29, she was going to be 24 now. Frank Powell was soon to be moving to Fox Films, but the first film that he had Theda appear in was at another studio. It was called The Stain. It's a lost film, like so many other of those early silent films. We'll talk a little more about that in part 2. Theda was not the star of The Stain. She had a very small bit part. But Frank Powell had an idea to mold her into a top leading lady for Fox. He liked her vibe. Throughout her career, Theda would deny even being in The Stain. "I started out as a star and I remained a star," she would tell anyone who brought it up. She finally came clean about it in the 1940s. The first film William Fox had assigned Frank Powell to direct at Fox Films was called A Fool There Was. This story had roots first as a painting called The Vampire. The Vampire took influence from Bram Stoker's Dracula and was a scandalous piece of art when it was first put on display. I'm going to read you the description from Eve Golden's book because she just illustrates this painting so well. Quote, "It showed a white-skinned, black-haired woman leaning triumphantly over a prone young man who'd either been drained of blood or sexually exhausted. It was all in the eyes of the viewer. It was a shocking view of powerful female sexuality. The painting gave men shivers and thrilled women," end quote. And it scandalized many. The painting was then teamed up with a poem to accompany it. And the poem and painting duo evolved into a play on Broadway. And then William Fox purchased the rights to the play in 1914. So now we're back to Frank Powell, a fresh new face at Fox. William Fox considered several actresses for the lead role, but Frank Powell advocated for the unknown Theodosia de Coppé, and they won. Theda was put under a 5-year contract with a salary of $150 per week. That $150 per week would adjust to about $2,800 per week today. The salary was figured out, the contract was signed, and now they needed to establish a name for their new future star. Theodosia Goodman just didn't pop, And they didn't much care for the name of Theodosia de Coppée that she had been going by in her stage work either. Her grandmother's maiden name had been Barringer, so it was decided that they would shorten that to Barra. Last name settled. Now, what to do with that long first name of Theodosia? They considered Teddy, Theo, and Theta, all nicknames that she'd had throughout her life. And they landed on Theta. Theta Barra. A Fool There Was began filming in the fall of 1914. Location shots were required in St. Augustine, Florida, and trouble began right away, before the film could even roll. The Great War was in its beginning months in Europe. The cast and crew of the movie were sailing outside of St. Augustine on a German steamer, without an American flag flown on it. The British Navy boarded their vessel, and it became quite the ordeal. And then another pause in filming occurred when Theda Barra threatened to quit because one of the costumes that she was required to wear. A swimsuit. She was outraged at the thought of wearing such an inappropriate garment in public. It sounded like it was similar to today's standard one-piece swimsuit. And something that would be shown on screen, she just couldn't. Well, she finally relented, and all of the stress over it was for nothing because the scene didn't even make the final cut. It's funny because what she wore in a film a few years down the road was way more scandalous than this one-piece bathing suit. Let me read you the description of A Fool There Was. This is the synopsis of the film from Rotten Tomatoes. Quote, "This early silent blockbuster finds successful husband, father, and politician, John Schuler, played by Edward Hosé, caught in the clutches of the scheming vampire, Theda Barra, a seductress famous for luring men, using them and leaving them ruined. Taking a business cruise to England without his wife and daughter, the easily fooled John is targeted by the irresistible vampire aboard the ship, and soon becomes her willing victim as she spends his money and drives him to drug addiction." End quote. So, something important to note here. When we are talking about vampires in this context, we are doing so metaphorically, not literal blood-sucking women. It is a woman who is cunning, cold, manipulative, and uses her almost magical allure to seduce and ruin men, with no care in the world of the destruction left in her wake. Instead of draining men of blood like a literal vampire, in this case, the blood is symbolized by the man's reputation, his will, and his money. She lures in victim after victim and spits them out the second she's fulfilled. She will steal a man from another woman, and she will kill if necessary. This vampire would likely be dressed in dark, sometimes provocative clothing. She would usually have long, dark hair, her lips stained with dark lipstick, and her eyes trimmed in thick black liner. The Vamp. Filming for A Fool There was wrapped up by the end of the year of 1914. And now came the really important part. Publicity. William Fox had decided that he wanted to put every ounce of effort the studio had in promoting this movie and this new film actress. And in doing so, he wanted to lean completely on her vamp character in this breakthrough role. So, this is where that exotic and adventurous background of Theda Barra that I detailed in the beginning comes from. William Fox had later said, "We had every type of woman on the screen except an Arabian." So, he would just create one. To test this wild idea on the public before they went all in, a highly fabricated and outrageous press conference was scheduled in January of 1915, and it was quite the dramatic event. This is where the wild tale of her early life in Egypt and Paris was first spun, and they left a lot of mystery to the story to further add to the intrigue. Most reporters bought it completely, mesmerized by the exoticness of it all. A few saw it for what it was. A huge fictional story. Either way, it made the papers. Big time. It became the talk of the nation. Who was this girl? A Fool There was released in January of 1915, shortly after that staged press event. The film was set to be a splash, but it had some big competition on the screen that year, like The Birth of the Nation. Still, A Fool There was one of the most successful films of 1915. I do want to mention, this is one of the only remaining films of Theda Bara's career, and it's available to watch in its entirety on YouTube if you want to check it out. I, of course, watched it so I could get to know Theodosia Goodman and her style. Theda Bara was an overnight superstar. In fact, she was the very first actress to accomplish this, to go from a complete unknown to a huge star, just like that. Most others had been successful and widely known Broadway stars, or had taken a few movies to become a star, a slower rise to fame. Nobody knew who Theda Bara was in the fall of 1914, or Theodosia Goodman, or Theodosia de Coppé. By January of 1915, just a few months down the road, everyone knew who Theda Bara was. And everyone wanted to know everything they could about her. William Fox capitalized on Theda's popularity and intrigue by keeping her very busy in his films, in vamp roles. Fox continued to go all out with her publicity of Theda, and she was required for these publicity events constantly. For her press conferences, they would rent a hotel room and adorn it with dark draperies, tiger skins, mystical statues, so-called ancient jewels, and crystal balls. Why a hotel room and not her home? Because her home was cozy and light and filled with books. They needed that dark crystal ball vibe to keep their story going. Fox's PR team dubbed her the wickedest woman in the world to the press. They built on their image of Theda by feeding reporters a line about her being a reincarnation of a 17th century mass murderer. They suggested that her name, Theda Bara, was an anagram for Arab death. By no coincidence at all. Anything they could do to support Theda's dark and mysterious vamp image. She was given scripts of what wild tales to tell reporters, and they were wild. Of course, none of this was who she was at all. She wasn't the dark, gothic woman she was portrayed to be. She didn't have any real wild tales of jewel thief or adventure. She wasn't wicked. But her nickname was the Vamp, both for the vamp roles Fox kept starring her in after their first success, and that they had to keep up with that image. She dropped the image on at least one occasion when she told a reporter, quote, "I wish to the uttermost depths of my soul for a part in which I'd neither be an incarnation of evil, as I am now, nor an incarnation of holiness. I want to play a kind-hearted, lovable, human woman," end quote. When Theda did play something good and more wholesome on screen, Fox was disappointed with the audience reaction. Theda was the vamp to filmgoers. And it's important to know that in those early days of films, audiences believed their favorite stars were the characters that they played on screen. So, Fox wanted Theda Bara to remain their vamp for as long as audiences wanted it. Listen to this. This is really interesting. To support Theda's image as a dark, evil, mysterious soul, Fox enlisted the help of a physiognomist. Physiognomy was the practice of reading one's personality by studying the shape and bumps of their skull. Physiognomist Emily H. Vaught reported these findings after her examination of Theda Bara's head. Quote, "Theda Bara has the muscular system of a serpent. Never in all my experience as a professional character reader have I gazed into a face portraying such wickedness and evil, such characteristics of the vampire and the sorceress," end quote. So dramatic. But it was yet another outlandish, almost unbelievable thing to grasp the attention of the public and keep the mystery alive. All of this nonsense worked for quite a while, but within about a year and a half of her arrival on the scene, Theda Bara's exotic Egyptian childhood had been discredited. She was just a nice Jewish girl from Cincinnati. The truth may have been out, but the image remained strong. Fans could just push that nice Jewish girl talk to the very backs of their brains. Theda was the vamp, and that's all that mattered. Some actually still believed the original story. It all just added to her intrigue. I imagine all of this nonsense must have been very difficult for Theda to navigate. Having to keep up such a ridiculous image whenever she was in the public eye. Having to be an actress not only in front of the camera, but to the press as well. Theda celebrated her success by renting a large apartment in Manhattan's Upper West Side. A place that could be her safe haven from it all. Maybe the only place that she could truly be herself. By now, her mother, brother, and sister had moved to New York and moved in with Theda in her new apartment. Bernard stayed back in Cincinnati to tend to a successful tailor shop. Theda loved her home, and she filled it with books. She still loved her escape into books, maybe now more than ever. In the fall of 1916, 2 years into her life as a film star, Theda finally got a part that she was proud and excited to play. Juliet in Fox's depiction of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. One reviewer, who clearly didn't know that this was the kind of professional opportunity Theda had dreamed of, wrote, quote, "Playing the sweetly ingenious Juliet must have irked her vampire soul," end quote. So many people still genuinely thought that she was a real-life, heartless vamp of a woman. Romeo and Juliet was a huge hit for Theda Bara. It was around this time that Fox decided to do a swift 180 in promoting Theda Bara's image. Fox decided to make her more acceptable and relatable to women. They no longer wanted her to be the heartless seductress that may have presented a threat to women. They wanted her to be seen as kind and warm and approachable. They weren't done with their wild antics, though. At the same time as deciding to make this drastic shift in her image, the PR team also released to the public a set of guidelines the studio had placed in Theda's new contract. A way to amp up her fame in a new bizarre way. Contract guidelines and stipulations that simply did not exist. It was all for dramatics in the press. They needed something new for everyone to talk about. These stipulations were: she must not marry while under contract. She must not appear in public without a veil. She must not use public transportation, only limousine. She must not go for walks during daylight hours. She must not go to Turkish baths. And she must keep curtains on the windows of her car. None of this stuff was actually in her contract. It was all just another ploy to add intrigue to her. But she was able to negotiate a big, fat new paycheck with her actual new contract. $3,000 per week in 1917, plus a percentage of her film's profits and another grand added onto her weekly pay every year for the life of her contract. $3,000 1917 dollars would be about $76,000 per week today. She was doing pretty well. Although Theda was making a ton of money, she wasn't necessarily living the life of a glamorous movie star, like the one she'd idolized as a teenager. She supported her mother and siblings, she kept her modest but comfortable apartment, and she didn't buy expensive things. She knew there would eventually be an end to her career and that big paycheck, so she was protecting as much of her money as possible and investing smartly. She was thinking of her future. Along with her new contract in 1917, the year also brought what would be Theda Bara's most famous role, Cleopatra. And this is where I'm going to leave off for this week. When we meet back again, I will talk about the grand production of Cleopatra and the remainder of Theda Bara's story. You don't want to miss it. Before I say goodbye for today, I want to say thank you. After my little rant about kindness at the end of the James Cagney episode, I have received so many lovely messages. They were just filled with so much positivity and love and support, and I just want to thank you guys that took the time to do that. Not only did it make me feel all warm and fuzzy, but it just gave me a little extra sliver of hope that we're going to be okay. We have enough love, compassion, and kindness in this world to be okay. You guys rock. Thank you so much for the love and support. And I encourage everyone to share those little bursts of love and support wherever you can. Tell your loved ones you're proud of them, that they're beautiful, that you appreciate them, that they're a hard worker, whatever fits. Because I'm telling you, positivity can be pretty contagious. Speaking of, I would love to read you a review of the week. This is another comment from Spotify, and it is from Kieran Matthew Anthony O'Driscoll. It says, quote, "An excellent podcast for which many thanks. The episodes dealing with Rock Hudson were extremely empathic and respectful towards his memory and legacy. It was tragic that he had to live in the closet for decades and that he died of AIDS. When you consider that, if he had been a generation younger, he would have been much freer to be open about his sexuality, and his illness would have been treatable so that he could have lived for decades longer. Brilliant tribute to Rock." End quote. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the journey through his story. It was especially emotional because he sounded like just such a truly amazing person. I chose to read this comment because Theda Bara, much like Rock Hudson, was forced to live a lie in public. It's a much different circumstance, of course, but she felt that she couldn't be her true self in the height of her fame as the Vamp. So she used her home as her safe haven, and so did Rock Hudson. His home was his most favorite place in the world. He didn't have to pretend to be anyone there. He didn't have to pretend to love someone he didn't love, or act a way that wasn't him. He could just be him, surrounded by the people that he wanted to be around. Fortunately for Theda Bara, it was easy to walk away from that false image anytime she wanted to, if she chose to. But Rock Hudson wasn't so lucky. Not in his time. And what you said is so very true. If only he had lived 20 or 30 years later, his story would have been such a different story. Thank you again, Kieran. And everyone, if you haven't listened to Rock Hudson's story, please go back and do that. That is also a two-part story. His story is really moving. I also want to tell you about a program that was created by one of the biggest cheerleaders of this podcast, Neely. Neely leads a program called Triumph Over Trauma, and their mission is to provide trauma-informed community care and resources. They offer workshops on forgiveness, journaling, and more, a lot of great health and mental health resources. And you can become a group facilitator for the program as well. They are doing wonderful humanitarian efforts for communities all over the world. So please check out their website to learn more. It's triumphovertrauma.info. Thank you for the wonderful work you do, Neely, and thanks for your continued support of the show. And as always, please don't forget to leave a comment on Spotify. Oh, and Apple users, let's see some more positive reviews over there on the Apple Podcast app. Having them really helps get new ears to the show. There are, I don't even know how many podcasts out there, millions, so many podcasts, and it's just really hard to be seen in that big old sea of podcasts. So all those reviews really help. And hey, share it on your social media. Share the show with other people. I want these remarkable stories heard. Thank you, everyone, and don't forget to meet me back here next week for the rest of Theda Bara's story. And you know what? I like the way that I ended the James Cagney episode so much that I'm going to say the same thing again. And maybe I'll just say it every time. Who knows? Reach for the positive in every day, be kind to everyone you encounter, and have a great rest of your week. My primary source for this episode was the book Vamp, The Rise and Fall of Theda Bara by Eve Golden. I also used RottenTomatoes.com and IMDb.